I am a former career soldier. I served in the German Armed Forces for over 18 years and worked in IT, mostly in cybersecurity. I served at sea, yes, and today I work as a cybersecurity consultant for the IT service provider of the German Armed Forces. You sit at the heart of the ship, and at the end of the day, you're responsible for ensuring that higher-ranking superiors can make their decisions based on the information you've gathered. And in a way, you're already ensuring security in your environment.
Welcome to Cybersecurity Shall Be C-Level Priority, the podcast that puts the digital world to the test. Cyber attacks are on the rise, and data is the most valuable asset in today's world. But how can we protect what matters most to us? Drawing on the latest insights, effective strategies, and practical tools, we'll show you how to create a more secure digital environment. Because one thing is clear, security isn't negotiable, it's a top priority.
Hello and welcome to a new episode of Cybersecurity Chefsache, the podcast. Today with Olaf. Hi, Olaf.
Oh, hi, Nico.
For everyone who doesn't know you yet, why don't you tell us a bit about yourself?
Yeah, hi. So my name is Olaf. I'm a former professional soldier. I spent over 18 years with the Bundeswehr, working in IT and above all, mostly in cybersecurity. I served at sea and also got to know various small units within the Bundeswehr. And today I work as a cybersecurity consultant for the Bundeswehr's IT service provider. And there I handle information security, conduct risk analyses, and develop security concepts according to BSI standards.
Today we have an absolutely fascinating topic because we want to talk about how discipline can help in developing a security mindset. And that fits perfectly since as a former soldier, you've acquired certain disciplines. And of course, military discipline is an important part of the training. How would you describe your career in the military? So what did you do? How did you get started? And above all, how did you actually get into IT and cybersecurity in the Bundeswehr?
Well, I think my path wasn't exactly the typical one. I did a regular apprenticeship back then at Telecom as a systems electronics technician. And in my family, there was already a bit of a military background. So my grandfather was a soldier. My mother was an officer's daughter. My cousin also went to sea, and my dad sailed as a civilian. So at some point, the desire to go to sea came up, and I ended up combining that with joining the Bundeswehr. And then after my training, I went straight to the Bundeswehr, but not directly back into IT. Instead, I joined what was called Surface Operations Service. And on board, I basically did airspace and maritime surveillance. And for that, you really need a lot of discipline and a certain mindset, you know, because at the end of the day, you're sitting right there in the very heart of the ship. Essentially, you're in what could be called the brain or the command center of the ship, and you're really trying to take in and process everything that's happening all around you, right?
Yeah, that's a super interesting topic because you just mentioned ship, navy, and then cyber. How do those things fit together?
Yeah, how do they fit together? Today, it fits together much more. Back then, the idea of cyber wasn't really there yet, but over time, yeah, I think I started in 2005, 2006, those were my first voyages at sea. Back then, it wasn't really the case that the ships were so strongly networked with each other that we might have accessed real-time data or were possibly connected to the internet, but today, that's completely normal. I think you also talked about that once with with Robert Koch.
Absolutely. And Robert explained it as well. And I found it so fascinating at the time that everything in the Bundeswehr, especially in the area of cyber and OT security in the Navy, really got started back then. Also, thanks to him and all the colleagues, both men and women who were involved in supporting it. I just find it so fascinating because at first, when you think of cyber, the Navy isn't the first thing that comes to my mind, you know, maybe I'm just wired differently, but I would have thought, okay, it probably has something to do with the army, or, you know, that it has less to do with the Navy. But now, after working in the OT field for 13 years and having been involved in several maritime projects, I obviously know that a ship is also a highly complex system, which in the end is nothing other than, well, an OT control system on land. My goodness. And in the end, it has to be just as secure. And that's why I find it really interesting that everything basically started with the Navy back then and only later was transferred to land. But now that we're at this point, when you left the Navy, how did your career develop from there? Where did you go after that?
Yes, exactly. In 2014, I basically went through a selection process with the Bundeswehr, and yes, I successfully completed it. I was selected for officer training, and as part of that, you attend the Bundeswehr Technical School that was in near Augsburg, where the technical school was located. I earned my state-certified IT technician qualification there. That program lasted 3 years. 3 years, exactly. After that, you have an additional eight-month course at the beautiful Naval Academy in Murvik. People jokingly call it the Hogwarts of the Navy. And as part of that, you have to be reassigned once the training here is completed. And I received a follow-up assignment in the Ulm area. There I was stationed at the Multinational Command as a cyber analyst. Yes, and that's where it all really started, my involvement with cyber topics kept deepening with NATO, the Bundeswehr, and so on.
What I find so fascinating is that back then I also worked at a company with two ex-soldiers, colleagues of yours, who told me a lot about the Bundeswehr, how things worked there and what experiences they had. How did your time in the Bundeswehr shape you, especially in terms of security and above all your security mindset? Were there any particular moments that really changed you where you thought, hey, I never saw it that way before?
Basically, when you join the Bundeswehr, you always go through basic training where you develop a certain basic sense or fundamental understanding. How did that develop in me? Well, I was always basically disciplined because I did a lot of sports. You need a certain level of discipline for that too. The security mindset came along at some point because, you're basically sitting on the ship right in the heart of it. And at the end of the day, you're responsible for making sure that higher ranking superiors can make their decisions based on the information you've gathered. You're essentially already responsible for the security of your environment. At the end of the day, it's also about how we're able to defend ourselves. And that's really where the first thoughts about security started to develop for me. At the end of the day, you also have to imagine that you are sailing through the Indian Ocean, making sure to watch out for where there might be a pirate ship, a merchant ship, or even an aircraft that might want to attack you or otherwise interfere with your, you have a mission to accomplish, and they're trying to prevent you from completing that mission. And that's basically it. You're already ensuring security in your surroundings.
You just mentioned it. What does a security mindset mean to you?
I think that's always a bit difficult to answer because everyone approaches it a little differently.
Maybe I'll give you my definition. For me, mindset always means that we need to have this way of thinking in our heads to ask, okay, how do we think about security? How should we deal with security? This topic, the vigilance, the sense of responsibility, that's what mindset means to me. And that's why I always talk about a mindset change, because many people don't see the responsibility as their own. A lot of people also say, when it comes to awareness, I don't need any of that. It doesn't concern me. And for me, that's exactly a mindset issue to say, I need to understand how important the topic of cybersecurity is, what responsibility I have to take for it, and also how vigilant I need to be when dealing with this subject.
In the military, it's like this. You have to be constantly alert because you're constantly facing changing situations. For example, you're on guard duty, you're assigned to a watch, sometimes even in the middle of the night, and you always have to stay alert. You always have to be present. If something happens, is there something here? Is there something there? And it's not good to become careless there, because you're on watch to protect your group, your larger unit, or even your ship. When I was sitting on the ship watching the radar, I was on my shift. There were over 200 people on board, and you always had to stay alert. And that kind of vigilance also carries over into the cyber world. So you're always in a state of security. So when you're there, it's also, I think it's always this vigilance, I believe that's really the best way to put it.
You're touching on a really interesting point for me there. I'd like to dig a bit deeper into that, because we want to shed some light on what discipline can actually change when it comes to mindset, or rather how important discipline is for mindset. You just mentioned a topic, especially from your time in the military, you always had to be vigilant. Now, looking at your current career path as well, which we'll get into more detail about later, but also looking back then, can't routines also cause you to lose vigilance? Because that's something I keep seeing with clients and partners alike. When we talk about security, I agree with you, this vigilance is extremely important and it's crucial to pay attention to it. But to some extent, we're also moving toward wanting to keep a lot of things automated, wanting to keep a lot in routine. Can't a routine also cause you to lose vigilance? Or to put it another way, not lose it, but can vigilance suffer as a result of routine? That's what I mean.
I absolutely agree with you. I mean, you've probably noticed it yourself in various audits, or seen it with different clients, that that routines can actually cause vigilance to drop, or that people's sense for sticking to routines can diminish as well. And that's why it's really important to maintain discipline, to be able to say to yourself, I'm disciplined enough to regularly review my routines. That's always the point, even in the cyber world, that you keep checking your processes. Is there something I could possibly change? Is there anything I can fine-tune there? And because of that, I find that routines keep changing a little bit over time. And I actually find that really exciting. Over the years, it's always been the case for me that my vigilance has never really dropped, you know. And I think that's something a lot of other people should also keep in mind, so to speak, to always maintain their discipline.
How was it for you, the roles between discipline, vigilance, and responsibility? Did you have a kind of balance there, or was there one area that you focused on in particular?
Well, over the years, it actually always balanced out because you are well. You, of course, at some point, you start out as a journeyman. You start at some point. But in the Bundeswehr, even at the lower ranks, in the lower rank range, you're already given responsibility, a lot of responsibility. And when you're at sea, I think it's always this collective big mindset that you have at the end of the day, right? We have, it's always about the mission. It's not about my ego, you know. It's always about the task that you're pursuing. And so I think that actually always keeps things pretty well generally organized.
Maybe a personal question. To what extent has your private life changed because of, well, the topic of discipline?
We have. Well, you know, you're just a bit more influenced by a soldier's mindset, right? I think sometimes my wife sometimes finds it a bit funny when those soldierly routines come back again. I haven't been working as a soldier for just over a year now, but she's also noticed that I've become a bit more relaxed. My tone has changed, you know. As a soldier, you're always very direct, I think. It's always like, how do you say, people used to say it was like machine gun fire, right? Like bam, 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 bam. That's sometimes how the language sounds. It can be harsh at times, but it's direct and it's clear, you know, clear instructions help you make clear decisions. That's, as a soldier, that's essential, right? These days, as a civilian employee, you just can't do that anymore. You can't just cut off a CEO or a colleague all the time, so to speak, and some people find this, the military way of speaking, to be very, very unpleasant, you know?
Yes, I believe that. So my experience was the same. When I had colleagues, especially in the military sector, that was basically the biggest adjustment for someone moving from the military to the private sector, not giving up the discipline, but simply changing the way of speaking and how things are usually done. and also expressing your own opinion sometimes. I think that was the biggest challenge, right? So not always just command and obedience, but also sometimes saying, well, this is how I see it and let's discuss it. That just wasn't the case at all in the beginning, right? You'd say, okay, you could do it this way. And then the person would wait and ask, well, Nico, how do you want it done? So that I definitely noticed that this was something people really struggled with at the beginning.
How did you deal with that? I mean, the very first point of contact. So if you have a soldier, you encounter this harsh language, you know, was that hurtful for you? Or did you develop any strategies to help these people so that they could adapt better? Because, I mean, I know that one colleague, and it was already told me back then, I think it's harder to get, it's very, very difficult to get the soldier out of someone, you know, especially to change the way they speak. So how did you approach that?
Well, for me, it was very clear that you have to bring a lot of understanding. So for me, it was absolutely no problem if he occasionally slipped back into that role. On the contrary, I always had to encourage him to be more independent, to do things on his own. Go ahead and do it. Make that decision yourself. You don't need my feedback for that. Also kind of building him up and saying, you're allowed to decide for yourself. You don't need to ask me. I think, as with everything in life, understanding is the be all and end all. You have to show understanding. You have to understand that that's just how it is. And you shouldn't let it discourage you if, let's say, you fall back into old habits again, right? So relapses happened again and again. And what always helped was working through it and coming back to it and saying, look, you don't have to do it that way. You can do it this or that way. And that led to things working out pretty quickly for both colleagues, right? Of course, there was an adjustment period, but in the end, it actually worked well. And every now and then they would slip back into their old patterns. But as I said, with understanding and by just explaining things over and over again, you can actually manage it quite well.
Yeah, I see it the same way, you know. Well, I mean, over the years, I've learned it too. And I think that's also the case when you move up to a higher rank or higher training levels in the Bundeswehr. At some point, you just learn to take on responsibility yourself and to make your own decisions. I mean, well, basically, we actually do that from the very beginning. But at some point, I just realized for myself, yeah, of course, I make the decisions. I've also had to make tough decisions, even as an officer. But at some point, I said, yes, I stand by it. You know, I stand by my decision. And I think that's extremely important, you know, and that's also a kind of discipline, you know, to say I stand by it, by the mistake, you know, or also by the decisions I make, you know.
Yeah, and I think that's also a story in itself. Now, to come back to Zimmer again, mindset is also constantly changing, right? So discipline is one thing, mindset is another. And I think that's also something we can learn from the topic of discipline, or let's say from military discipline, especially in relation to a security mindset. Of course, it's good to choose a path and to keep following that path. But it's also important to think about how things are changing. So, you know, as they always say in information security, you could have a continuous improvement process. I think that's also important when it comes to mindset, right? You can't just stay stuck with your mindset. You always have to look at how you can further develop it, or rather how you can grow along with it. And I think that's also a very important component. But as you already mentioned, you then took the path, you made the transition from the Bundeswehr into the private sector. And I think that's also super interesting. What was that transition like for you, moving from the military into the private sector? How did that experience play out for you?
Well, I had a lot of conversations with friends, with family, and also with former colleagues. And at some point, I made the decision for myself, especially since I actually came from a civilian background. I did my apprenticeship in the civilian sector. My wife also worked for years in a civilian company, so we always stayed in touch with that world. You build up a large civilian network, and at some point, you get encouraged to think, hey, wouldn't that be interesting for you as well? Also, since I was a career soldier, you know, so basically, I already pretty much had my pension secured. And it just kept getting more interesting. There were exciting projects in the civilian sector. So I simply thought, yeah, why not give it a try, right? I then had, there are certain options where you can, let's say, be seconded or assigned elsewhere. So the career soldier status is put on hold, and then you can be seconded, let's say, to partner companies that work very closely with the Bundeswehr for a certain period of time. But that option didn't really present itself for me. And at some point, I just made the tough decision to leave the Bundeswehr. A lot of people shook their heads. A lot of people just didn't see it that way. They also didn't think it was a good idea. They told me that too. I can absolutely understand that. But, you know, my mindset just developed in a certain direction to say, okay, I've made this decision now and I'm going to see it through. That also takes a certain amount of discipline. Yes. And I received a lot of positive feedback, but of course also some negative. That's just part of it, you know. And I have to say, even today, I simply don't regret the step I've taken. I always tell my boss that too. That's what I always said from the beginning. I still get up in the morning with a smile on my face, and I think that's still a really good thing. That was always a really good sign too. But it's also, one has to say, it's a very, very big step to leave everything behind. All the experience you've gained, the entire network you've built up as a soldier, to leave all that behind. And of course, it's also a big financial leap you take, you know. So you're basically giving up a lot in that sense. So there's always a certain feeling of fear that comes with it, you know. Will everything work out? Will I be accepted like this? Will my soldierly nature, what I've learned, be accepted? Will I change? Will I change my mindset? Will I change the way I speak? And will I maybe get support if I ever have problems? But up to now, everything has worked out really well.
Where would you say the biggest personal challenge was for you in making this transition? Was it really, as you mentioned at the beginning, this military drill that just doesn't go over as well in the private sector? Or was there something else where you'd say, that was my biggest challenge in making this transition?
My biggest personal challenge was also changing my mindset. You know, because, well, it's always this, you know, you have certain fears. That's one thing. You have to learn how to deal with that. You have to adjust your routines. It was also always a really big challenge that you constantly had to, because now things work differently. You always had a constantly structured day. You got up in the morning, you drove to work, you went through your morning routines. At the end of the day, you had your processes, and now you're in civilian life. For me, it's still like this. I always get up at exactly the same time. In the morning, I take the kids to kindergarten or school, and then I sit down at my computer. I still go through certain routines, get my first information for the day, and then basically start working on my projects. And before, it was always like this. You had certain work assignments that you completed. But on top of that, you also had military training, you know, sports, shooting practice, marching, NBC training, and so on and so forth. And that's spread out over the whole year, you know. So there are a lot of things coming your way that aren't just about your job. And now it's purely about focusing on the work.
And what were you able to take from military discipline into the private sector? What, so to speak, helped you with this mindset change?
Staying calm, always staying calm, and always trusting in what I've learned. And above all, remaining steadfast. So always sticking to what I've decided is the right path. Of course, you can always make adjustments in certain areas. You should do that from time to time. That's why, you know, I've always been a fan of the PDCA cycle too. And that's actually always helped me to say, okay, stick with it. You know, don't change, don't give up. Giving up, that would have been, well, I think I could have called the Bundeswehr at any time and said, I want to come back. My personal manager at the time just said, yeah, if you ever feel like coming back, just let us know, you know. And I still haven't done it to this day.
But that's also an interesting topic, because if you bring it back to the subject of security mindset, those are exactly the values you should have in a security mindset, right? This staying calm, you know, I always talk about the headless chicken mode, you know, When something happens, everyone runs around frantically and tries to do something. And in doing so, they end up, in quotation marks, maneuvering themselves into bigger problems instead of approaching the issue calmly and thoughtfully. I mean, I can say that comfortably from my own situation, you know. A lot of people are simply overwhelmed by it and have no idea what's happening. And then they always end up in headless chicken mode. But I think that's where mindset helps. That's where discipline comes in. And as you also said, especially this mental process of constantly reminding yourself, what am I capable of and what have I been trained for? I think that's also very important to have that self-confidence and also the confidence to say, okay, we can do this, we can handle it. Never, right? So I think that's already an important point that you can generally include when it comes to the topic of a security mindset, or say, guys, don't run around like headless chickens, but instead maybe take a moment to think in the back of your mind, what am I actually capable of? Where are my strengths? And then focus exactly on those instead of trying to somehow make the impossible possible.
That's exactly what happens in a crisis, right? You really start to lose your head because your stress level just goes through the roof, you know. A flood of information comes at you. And you have to try to say, okay, I'll take the information and process it first. Okay, set it aside for now. Is this actually relevant for me right now? And always in small steps, so to speak. And then at some point to a certain, and then, I mean, that's what you have your staff for, your crisis team. So you can assess the situation and then say, okay, I'm making the following decision now, you know. And in the Bundeswehr, it was like this. I would always work out two options for my boss. Well, I would always come up with two possible decisions, but I would always recommend the one I personally favored. And basically that path was always the one that was taken. It always somehow worked out, you know, and nothing is impossible. So I always have this mindset for myself. Nothing is impossible, you know. I'm also not someone who blocks things or anything like that, you know, because a lot of people always say that IT security, or during lunch breaks, it was always like this. The information security officer, which I was told was always the least popular person at the table. But I actually don't think that's true about us. I mean, we are really the ones who make things happen, you know. Of course, we have a certain standard that we have to meet and that we also stick to, because at the end of the day, that's our mindset. We want to protect certain company values, right? And we also follow the procedures that we've been taught. Sometimes that means we can be a bit stubborn and rigid, you know, well, not rigid exactly, but we stubbornly stick to the path. So, and then we have a left and a right boundary. It's the same in the military. You know, my boss always used to say, you have a left and a right boundary here. Within that framework, you can move, make your decision or come up with solutions for me, you know. And it's the same in projects, you know. I'm the last person who wants to block anything.
You're bringing up another important point, the topic of communication. You mentioned at the beginning as well, a military approach also means communication. That might not be exactly how things are done in the private sector. Although I can tell you, I have a Russian wife, and sometimes I think, wow, she's being rude now, or she's really angry. And in reality, she's just telling her father, I love you, so to speak. I think communication, depending on how you do it, can be very different, especially across languages. But especially when we're talking about a security mindset, clear and calm communication about security issues is, of course, important. Looking back, how do you see this now for yourself in terms of the relationship between the private sector and the military? Do you think that communication was also, let's say, a success factor for discipline?
So communication is, I think, important in every respect. I mean, for soldiers, or as a soldier, it's also the case that if my superior hasn't communicated, then what am I supposed to do, right? So then I'm left, as we say in the Navy or in Northern Germany, standing awkwardly in the lee, you know, in a vacuum. And of course, I could just go off and do something, right? But will that lead to success? So will that mean I fulfill my assignment, or, you know, basically achieve my superior's goal? Or at the end of the day, will I also achieve the company's objective, right? Communication is the key to everything. So whether it's in project management or in security, it's extremely important. And yes, in your personal life, you said it yourself, even with your wife, communication is extremely important. And sometimes, you know, it can happen that she says something, she phrases it one way, but actually means something else, right? So, of course, that means you have to talk about a lot of things. And in security, it's like this. My feeling in the projects I'm currently involved with, you have TAUEL, you get so the CISO area, for example, naturally brings a lot of regulatory requirements with it. And at the end of the day, the projects just throw up their hands in despair. What am I supposed to do? So, and then I come in as a consultant and say, it's not a big deal. I'll put it in order for you. I'll communicate it for you. And I'll also build the bridge for you to the CISO area. It's not rocket science, right? And that's also, as you've often mentioned, you don't sell security through fear. It's always about participation, right? It's life. You have to live it yourself and you don't sell it through fear. And fear, I think, if you communicate through fear, people shut down, they close themselves off. And it's the same with soldiers. And generally in the military as well, if you try to lead through fear, people will run away.
Maybe an interesting question on that. What do you think companies in the private sector can adopt from military thinking? And what should they absolutely not adopt?
Well, soldiers are very strong leaders. That's definitely something you can take away from it. And also the discipline they showed every day, that's extremely important. And yes, that's really the point, isn't it? Security mindset. So we have soldiers, former soldiers, who have a very good, very strong sense of security. And they always combine that with their discipline. You have to understand they've built up routines over years. And that's also how they develop plans, right? With routines, with standards. And they're always very, very disciplined about that. And I think that's something companies can really benefit from and above all, make use of that potential. Not to say, oh, you're a former soldier, well, just settle in first or something like that. No, use that potential, right? That's extremely important.
Now, maybe another question for the audience, especially those with a military background. What tips would you give to people who are currently working in the military, in the field of cybersecurity, and are now considering whether or not to move into the private sector?
What tips would I give? Don't be afraid. It doesn't hurt. People in civilian companies don't bite. They're open to learning and discovering new things. And many companies actually benefit from this openness because we often serve as a bridge between different groups. I mean, you always stay in touch with your network, with former units or former colleagues, and otherwise make good use of the time you have available. So soldiers who are now leaving as temporary soldiers still receive certain support programs. They really should use that time invested in training to further educate themselves so that they can reach their full potential, especially if they're going into the security field, so they can really make the most of their abilities.
Yeah, great. Thank you. Maybe to wrap things up, something I'd also like to know, what would be your wish for the future when it comes to a security mindset? What should everyone bring to the table? Or rather, what is it that makes you say, this is why I get up every day to achieve exactly that? So what do we actually still need to do to develop a better mindset?
I think sometimes it's really, really hard to put that into words because as a soldier, I just live it every day for myself. I have my routines. I have my mindset.
I think that's a huge advantage for you as a soldier because...
Yes, exactly. That's the big advantage. But what would you... But how do you see it? I mean, how do you convey... So how do you live it yourself? You're also in the security field every day. How would you describe that for yourself?
Well, I can tell you, and I've mentioned it several times on the podcast, my final boss is my wife. She knows that too. So, you know, she listens to this anyway. Hi, honey, I love you. But from a security mindset perspective, she's the complete opposite of me. She uses the same password everywhere. She downloads anything that isn't nailed down. So, for example, when kids are visiting us and they want to draw something, she just downloads random mandalas and other stuff from all sorts of websites with all kinds of attachments. And I only notice this regularly on my firewall because I have a really, really good firewall at home. Blocked, 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 blocked. And at some point, I always get a message from my wife. Honey, I got kicked out of the Wi-Fi again. What did I do this time? And that's just, you could say it's the complete opposite. But I think the reason we always manage to work it out, Eisend, I believe this is what's most important when it comes to mindset. Just explaining things, always saying, look, honey, not like you idiot, you did this and that. But really, look, honey, this and that just happened. Remember to keep that in mind. I've been doing this for 4 years now. And I'll keep doing it this way for the next 15 or 20 years because I know exactly that she just doesn't see this mindset. And I think that's also a super important part of it. if you don't see the mindsetter, to put it another way, if you're not open to it, it's just like, can you be hypnotized, yes or no? I also think a lot of it depends on whether you want it or not. And it's the same with the security mindset. Do you want to have a security mindset or not? If you don't want to have, unlike my wife, for example, you won't be able to get it. No matter what I do, no matter what I try, that means I have to figure out how to build a system around my wife, so to speak, so that she doesn't cause any harm to it or suffer any harm herself. And to bring this back to a broader perspective, I think that in our society, this collective mindset for security just isn't a focus for many people yet. That's why I always say at trade fairs, events, or even when I do life hacking demonstrations, I don't talk about the company. I always talk about the individual. I show them how I can access private cameras. I show them how easy it is to get past the Fritzbox and so on and so forth. In other words, I always show something personal because that's the only way it eventually clicks for people. If I show them now, yes, personal involvement. Yes, exactly. Creating personal involvement. If I tell them now, if you're not careful, your company phone will get hacked. They just think, well, it's only a company phone. I don't really care. And I think that's the biggest challenge for me when we talk about mindset. First, getting people to even accept the idea of thinking about a security mindset, and then really recognizing the importance of this topic. And I think that's where you and many others, as well, especially those from a military background, have a huge advantage, because you simply acquired this mindset as part of your training, regardless of whether it was specifically about security. As you already said, I'm structured, I know what I'm capable of, I know what I have to do, and I deal with it accordingly. I think that's difficult.
Listening to you, I think you just described really well and in a really cool way how we actually do things at work. The way you put it really captures our approach. We go into a company, into a business, into a project, and we try to understand their unique challenges and needs before we start working together. We encounter people who don't have the sense for security. And you create a thoughtful, robust, supportive, and comprehensive framework so that they can safely and confidently navigate the project or move securely within the company, but with the wonderful added task of also showing people how they can thoughtfully and creatively put it into meaningful practice differently on a personal level and maybe even start to truly live that way. So what they do is they try themselves to carefully recognize and identify the various risks that might exist in their environment. And then maybe say to themselves, hey, I think I need to change my password. Or if I'm about to download something and I've actually experienced this exact situation with my wife, she'll also pause and ask, can I download this now or should I wait? Or look, I just got this email. Can you take a look at it? And now she's also gotten to the point where she examines the emails closely, especially the sender's address at the top. So is this actually legitimate? That's part of it too. You're living it yourself. Sometimes you can't quite put it into words like just now, but through conversations, through communication is extremely important. You can convey something. That's just how it is for me. I go through life with open eyes and an open, curious mind, constantly looking out for what might potentially trigger me, what kinds of things could possibly affect me personally in my own unique way. And then I always look at that and I try to incorporate it into my work.
Yes, and I think what we also shouldn't forget is that cybersecurity isn't like a car. A car is right in front of me. I can get in and out of it. Of course, I can't do as much as I used to, like just grab a wrench and tinker around with the wiring. That's not really possible these days either. So if my car stops working, I can plug in a connector and some electronic system will tell me what might be broken. And usually when the ADRC or whoever comes, they always say, we have to tow it to the shop because we can't do anything ourselves. With cybersecurity, it's just not tangible. It's the cyber realm. It could be a website. It could be an email account. It could be some server located in Timbuktu. It could be an application. And I think that's where we have the most problems when we talk about mindset or about sharpening a sense of responsibility. It's not tangible. It's not tangible at all. And I don't know if you've had the same experience. Have you ever tried to explain your job to someone from outside the field?
Oh, yes, often. Often, I have to be honest. I also worked in IT forensics once, and it was relatively easy there. But if I try to do that today as a consultant, yeah, I'm a consultant for what I advise on IT security matters. IT. Okay, so then people at least understand, okay, it's about computers. But then when you go further...
Exactly. And then the next question comes, can you help me with my printer? That is the next question.
Yeah, printers not so much, but I always try to steer it in a different direction. Like I sell security. How do you handle your data? For example, or which application processes which data. Basically, it's really just about data or information which can move anywhere, whether it's lying on the table or stored in a computer. At the end of the day, what we do is, I always say, we create a foundation. I provide my foundation, meaning that people get a sense of how to handle this information securely. But then people come and say, yeah, but I have this and that tool, and it does this and that and the other. Sure, the tool can be as good as possible, but I still have a certain craft, right? A baker also learned how to knead dough at some point, and maybe today he relies on his machine. But what happens if the machine breaks down tomorrow? Then he has to go back to his basics. So, and that's where I start as well, you know, talking about encryption or, well, for many people, that's already pretty abstract. But then I say, okay, the tool does that for you, right? But how does it all actually work in the background? So I see that as my job, you know, and you, yeah, because at some point you come up with catchy examples, I think, for these people, for the folks around you, to describe your job, right?
Yeah, my daughter always says I'm the firefighter of the internet. So if I ever had, you know, an idea of what the job is, it's the firefighter of the internet, right? Because I somehow put out fires on the internet. I think the problem is, and as you also said, that it's not so catchy and we're still always lumped together with IT. We're IT people, right? That's why the example with the printer, I still get that to this day. Can't you fix a printer? Or can't you make a website here? This, that, and the other. And these days, I always say it right away when someone approaches me. Before, I used to say I was a management consultant for cybersecurity. Back then, as soon as I said management consultant, the topic was basically settled for them. He does something with management, but now I've switched to the other side. And now I just say I'm primarily responsible for security within the company and outside the company. And for me, security doesn't just mean IT security, but also security in the physical sense, you know. So also the topic of physical security as well. And that's easier for people to understand because physical things like fences, cameras, access control, and so on, everyone gets that. But when it comes to the topic of security, it's really difficult. And I think that's exactly an area just to bring it back where discipline, responsibility, and mindset all have to come together for it to work. And especially when it comes to the security mindset, as I always say, there needs to be a mindset change in our society. It's not just that everyone should develop a mindset for security, but that we need a societal mindset for security. But I still think that's difficult because so much of the conversation is still focused on fear-based topics. This one got encrypted, that one got encrypted, this one got hacked, and so on. And then there's the problem that not every hack is the same, right? You might know this from your own personal experience as well. When someone comes up to you and says, I've been hacked, or I've been attacked now. But in reality, they just had a weak password that was easily discovered or hacked in the sense that I clicked on a phishing email and so on. So for me, this is also part of the mindset issue that these terms and the basic understanding simply aren't there at all. Why not? It's not taught anywhere. Honestly, we could spend another 3 hours just discussing that alone. Cybersecurity education was also a topic, but just to bring it up again, I still think it's absolutely negligent that we don't have proper training in this area. Media literacy is the magic word here, and I've been advocating for years that we need to do more because having kids learn Excel, Word, PowerPoint, or how to make an HTML page, yeah, that's nice, that's good, but they need to deal much more with what it actually means to grow up in this digital world because that's what we're seeing. Everything's going to become more digital, right? I recently became a father, and you laugh. I was surprised. I was actually able to submit the application for parental leave digitally, funnily enough. I had to print it out and then send it off, but I was able to create it digitally. You also had to do it with an ID, with a federal ID and so on. So that means even at the administrative level, things are becoming digital, although I'd still like to put digital in quotation marks because it's not really truly digital yet. But it also means that everyone is dealing with these topics, especially in a generation of TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, and all the others anyway. And then there's the whole topic of AI, right? We could also saddle up the huge horse that is AI now. That comes on top of everything else, and it makes it even harder to understand and grasp it all, especially if you're not really receptive to this kind of mindset.
But I think as fathers who work in this field, we are more likely to pass this on to our children. And I also see this at my older daughter's school. They're even at 7 or 8 years old, they're already glued to their phones. And sometimes I feel like they don't even know what they're actually doing, you know, what kind of information they're actually handling. it's really crazy. And I should mention that I'm also digital first responder at the BSI. And everything you're talking about right now is like, yeah, it brings back one case or another where I think to myself, it's funny, you know? So sometimes I had a case, for example, it was an older gentleman. What was he? 76, 77 years old. He called and said, "Hey, Werben, I've got a problem here. My computer, nothing is working anymore. I'm completely at a loss, you know?" So I said, just stay calm, you know? And then really during the conversation, though, being a digital first responder means you're the first point of contact to take on the problem. And then maybe say, okay, you should perhaps contact an incident handler or maybe a specialist who can really take a look at it live, you know? So, and with him, I just handled it over the phone, you know? We really were well, I couldn't see anything. And I was just saying, yes, please click here and I'll click there. What do you see now, you know? At the end of the day, he was so happy that I was able to help him in just about an hour. And I was also able to give him a sense of calm, you know? And that's really about staying calm, you know? Don't get frantic, because otherwise everyone around you will get frantic too, you know? And when you get called as a sort of digital first responder, like, yeah, my credit card information is gone, my email has been hacked, I have the feeling that someone is reading my emails. I have a virus on my computer, even though it later turned out that he didn't have a virus at all, you know? So it's really funny. But I can only recommend being a digital first responder. Please, 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 more security people who know what they're doing should sign up and really get involved, okay?
Well, I used to do that too. Not as a digital first responder, it was called something else back then. And I can confirm that myself. There were all sorts of people reaching out, really everyone under the sun. And what's always interesting is that everyone falls into this quick send it off mode. Everyone immediately saw everything in black and painted the worst case scenario. Like, oh, the media is saying this and now my data is gone and so on. And that's also an issue that we've been struggling with for years now, this whole topic of fear, you know, because fear paralyzes people, you know that yourself. And when people are paralyzed, then things just can't work as well. And I think that's also an important issue. On the other hand, when we talk about mindset and discipline, we need to move away from building a mindset based on fear. Instead, we have to build a mindset with the values we've already discussed and not with fear, because for me, fear creates exactly the wrong kind of mindset. And that's exactly the point where people start saying, well, what am I supposed to do with that? It doesn't affect me anyway. There's nothing I can do about it now anyway. I've also seen people who just gave up. They said, well, that's just how it is. Then, well, that's just the way it is for me now.
Yeah, then they say to themselves, well, now I'm the one who has to deal with the damage. Yeah, then I just have to call the bank and explain the situation. And that's that. You know, then I say, but it's the same when you have someone who says, yeah, my account got hacked. So what do you do then? So then they really call you in a panic and say, yeah, what should I do now? Well, I have my routines. I have my disciplines. I stick to rules or to procedures, processes that I once developed for myself or that were taught to me at some point, and then I might have adapted or improved them for myself, you know? And then I just go through them in my head. Have they already done this? Have you already done this? This. So basically like a checklist at the end of the day. And then you come to a meeting. You give your assessment. You say something like, okay, we can go down the following path now, but you have to decide, right? As a consultant, I can't make decisions for people or for companies either. That always has to be done by management or the people responsible for the project, right? But we have, I'm sure you've done this too. You've developed processes for yourself personally that you routinely work through over and over again, right? And that gives you structure and above all, a lot of calm as well.
And there's an important point we haven't even talked about yet. You're welcome to share your opinion on that too. That's always a point for me as well. Why I keep coming back to the topic of podcasts, why I keep getting involved. Trust is also a super important factor, not just for mindset, but in general, because trust can also create a culture. How do you see it?
I basically don't trust anyone. No, just kidding. Yes, trust is extremely important, right? Especially when I'm dealing with data or information where I say no one else can know this at the end of the day, right? So I really have to try to use certain techniques to make sure that the information is always obfuscated at the end of the day, right? But there are many approaches like zero trust where you simply say, I don't trust anyone, right? In that case, the person has to authenticate themselves and so on and so forth.
But first, you have to trust the zero trust approach. That's already the problem. What actually is zero trust? That's already the question.
Yes, exactly. That's one of the things, right? Trust is, I think, in a company, well, I certainly come in with a lot of credit in advance as a consultant. When people already say, yeah, here, security consultant for, right, is now responsible for us or helps and supports us. So you already come in with a lot of goodwill. At the end of the day, people already trust you, right? And people also trust in your education, in what you have learned and what you are now passing on, right? And I always see myself as a security specialist. I basically don't trust anyone at first, you know, and then I look at who I can trust. So in turn, we have processes, procedures that we simply routinely check. We create an overview of the situation that we're currently facing and carefully assess it for ourselves, you know, and then we build our work on that accordingly.
Yeah. And I think what you also shouldn't forget, let me give another example when we talk about trust, right? Let's take as an example, if I didn't trust my wife, and because I wouldn't trust her, I'd install a tracker on her phone or something like that so I could check every 24 seconds where she is or isn't. Yeah, then I could say, now I trust the whole thing. But on the other hand, what kind of trust is that? On what basis is this trust formed? And it's exactly the same the other way around. For example, in the field of cybersecurity, of course, I can create trust in some way, like saying, I have this product now and I trust it, so now I'm secure. But I always have to keep in mind that just a product, or in quotation marks, the other exemplar, mobile app that tracks location, doesn't actually create trust for me, right? I mean, as an XR, she could go shopping or go to a park and still meet up with someone and I just wouldn't know. That means if I have a problem with trust, then an app doesn't really help me to regain my trust either. It's more like in my mind, in the back of my head, I think now I have trust again. But no, I don't actually have trust. I still have mistrust. And it's the same in security. Building trust just by introducing some app or some process, that's not real trust. There's still mistrust in the whole thing. And it's just a control measure that's being implemented. And that's why you should always consider whether simply trying to regain trust through some kind of software is really the right approach.
But it's, well, you can break it down like that, right? You just mentioned your wife. Like, what do you do? What do you do with your wife so that she trusts you at the end of the day? I mean, in the end, it's no different. It's just like, okay, I get to know the person. I ask my questions and so on and so forth. I give nice gifts. You spend a lot of time together, right? And I think it's the same in a company at the end of the day. You spend a lot of time together. You communicate with each other. You get to know each other. And at some point you evaluate like, yeah, this person, this fits, this feels right. Maybe we have the same approach, you know, and then we go down that path together. Over time, as I spend time with that person, trust develops, right? And at some point you decide, yeah, you get married, you know, and you have kids together because you just say, wow, great guy or great woman. And it's the same in a company. It's no different, right? At some point the recruiter calls and says, hey, wouldn't you maybe be interested in working with us? We are such and such company. We offer you this and that kind of environment. And then you evaluate it for yourself because they're introducing themselves. You're introducing yourself. And then you say, hey, yeah, cool. Cool, cool combination. We can give it a try, right? And that's already the first sign of trust, right? And of course, there are plenty of moments where that trust can be lost again. Like, for example, how do I handle the company's data? No, well.
Absolutely. And I think trust is not a one-way street, right? So Elso, right, trust is a path that goes both ways. And sometimes you have to earn someone's trust. That's always a topic as well. And especially when we're talking about zero trust, it's not enough to just say, I don't trust anyone. It's also about constantly questioning the trust you have in those you do trust and checking whether they still deserve that trust or if at some point you need to withdraw it.
But it's an interesting, also a fascinating topic, right? I think that's something you could talk about for hours again.
Maybe to wrap things up, one last question for you personally. When you look back on your life today, not just your job, but also your private life, what does security mean to you today? In a general sense, what does security mean to you today?
For me, security means being able to move safely in my environment without having an accident and without being discredited or having any misinformation or false information spread about me, for example. That's also how I shape my environment at the end of the day. I share what I want to share. I make that decision actively. And I also pay close attention to what I share. So what information do I disclose? I think a lot still needs to change for many people, because you see a lot of people who share a lot of information without even realizing it. And I think that's also one of the significant tasks and responsibilities we have in our daily work, like you do with your podcast. So help change people's security mindset.
Although I'd like to jump in here, because I'm probably the negative example for you, since I share everything, even things like the birth and so on. And of course, a lot of people have approached me and said, Nico, isn't that too private and so on? The problem that people don't understand is that there's actually a lot more that's private. So people who are with you in private actually get a lot more information. They know much, much more about me. Sure, I make videos. Of course, I also share things. And for me, it was also important to share with the community that I became a father for a very simple reason. So they know, okay, I'll be a bit more offline for now, or have less going on. And because they noticed that I was going to become a father, and I just think it's a beautiful thing. I'm proud to have become a dad again. That's why I shared it. But that doesn't mean I share everything. And I think that's a topic in our current times, in this influencer game, you know, that a lot of people think all these influencers, they share everything, right? That's all well. Surely there are influencers who do share everything, but I think the flip side of the coin is that no, they don't share everything. They consciously choose what they want to share, but from the outside, it looks as if they're sharing everything, you know? And for me, it's always like this. I always say, anything I share, I would be fine posting it right outside my front door. And that's how I've lived for ages. I also use social media just like anyone else, even though a lot of these security experts on my side say, wow, you use social media and wow, you have a smart home that's just not acceptable. But I always say, for me, that's my personal line between usability and security. I always love having both usability and security. And of course, security is an important topic for me. But when I share things on LinkedIn, I do so with the awareness that I am always sharing them publicly. And for example, what I would never do is post a photo of my child online, you know? That brings us back to another topic where we could digress again, namely the topic of media literacy, right? All parents are immediately eager to have your child posted in a WhatsApp group, maybe with a smiley or whatever put over it. Although I've told them 100 times already that the smiley is just placed over the picture and that you can easily remove the smiley with a simple program because it's just a layer on top. And yet they're always so eager to make sure that certain photos aren't shown. But then the child is on Snapchat or Instagram with a public profile and is lying half naked on the beach there. So that's kind of the problem, I think, where you really have to be careful that a lot of things are always seen in a certain way. And that then becomes the fixed opinion. But in the background, things are actually happening very differently. And I just have a completely different awareness of the topic because I deal with it every day compared to someone who doesn't and just thinks, oh, Nico is now sharing his entire private life. No, that's exactly what I'm not doing.
Yes, exactly. That's what I mean. You know, you actively decide for yourself because you have a certain mindset. Where you say, this is safe for me, you know, and I also just want to share that. But as you said yourself, I don't post a photo of my child on the internet and say, this is my child. No, I made that decision actively. I actively decided. I'm telling you that I became a dad, but what my child looks like, I will never show you, something like that, you know.
Yes. And I think it's also really important to think for yourself about what data you reveal and how you reveal it. That's something that also has to be part of your mindset. Also, just to say, okay, there isn't just one mindset, but for me, my mindset is I do it and I feel good about it.
Yes, exactly, exactly. And that's what makes it pleasant at the end of the day.
Thank you, Olaf, for the interesting discussion with you. Of course, I wish you lots of success in your civilian career now and continued enjoyment in what you've done and what you will do in the future. And with that, I would say that's it for this episode of Cybersecurity Chef Sarah, the podcast. We'll hear and see each other next time. See you then.
Thank you, Nico, again for the invitation, and I wish you continued success with the podcast, and I will definitely remain and continue to be an active listener.